Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to today's show. We're reading from Playboy Digital, Sex and Culture, Hard Science. People think sex is deadlier than driving, and that's a problem. Imagine a guy who unknowingly gives chlamydia to his girlfriend. Let's say it's a very mild infection and she's completely cured after taking a week's worth of antibiotics. Now imagine a guy who unknowingly gives his girlfriend the flu during sex. Let's say it's a very serious case and she dies as a result of the infection. Which man do you think would be judged more harshly by society? According to a new study led by Terry Conley of University of Michigan, published in the International Journal of Sex Health, people view the guy who transmitted chlamydia more negatively overall, rating him as more selfish, dumb, and reckless of the two. Reversing the genders in these scenarios doesn't matter either, whether it's a man giving infection to a woman or a woman giving it to a man. STD transmitters are seen as worse people than those who pass on non-sexual infections, even when the non-sexual infections have devastating consequences. Why is that? Dr. Conley argues that STDs and people that transmit them are unfairly stigmatized by society, owing sex education efforts to focus heavily on STD reduction. Such efforts, she and her colleagues claim, have stigmatized STDs beyond their degree of severity for relative to other diseases, and an interpretation of sexual activity as unduly risky, for example, relative to other risky activities. In other words, we may have unintentionally taught people to see sex as riskier than it really is and to be traditionally afraid of STDs. To provide further evidence for this idea, authors ran another study involving 700 participants who were asked the following two questions. If 1,000 people took a 300-mile drive from Detroit to Chicago, how many would be expected to die as a result of a car crash on the way? If 1,000 people had a single act of unprotected sex yesterday, how many would be expected to die as a result of contracting AIDS from this sexual encounter? Participants thought more people would die from sex compared to the car crashes, a lot more. Specifically, the average number of deaths in a car crash was estimated to be 4 out of 1,000, less than 0.5%. By contrast, the average number of deaths from contracting HIV through a single sexual encounter was 72 out of 1,000, or about 7%. That means people think unprotected sex is 17 times deadlier than driving a car. While the author's research points out, these estimates couldn't be further from the truth. In reality, participants dramatically overestimated both risks. The real kicker, though, is that people are actually 20 times more likely to die while taking a 300-mile trip than they are to die from contracting AIDS through a single act of condomless sex. In light of the substantially greater risk associated with driving, Dr. Conley argues that it's rather odd for us to spend much time preaching abstinence from sex in order to prevent spread of STDs, but never argue for abstinence from driving in order to prevent injury and death from automobile accidents. Some of you may have reached this point wondering what's so bad about stigmatizing STDs. In fact, I'm sure some of you would argue that stigmatizing STDs potentially would be a good thing in the sense that it might decrease the frequency in which people have unprotected sex. Unfortunately, studies have shown stigmatizing a behavior doesn't reduce it. For instance, the more people experience an internalized obesity stigma, the less likely they are to diet and lose weight. Dr. Conley suggests that all the stigmas created by STDs may similarly be counterproductive in the sense that the fear of becoming stigmatized could potentially discourage people from being tested for STDs in the first place and sharing their status with partners. While sex might not be as risky as we think, there is still risk associated with it and shouldn't be abandoned, save for sex practices. So keep using condoms and keep getting tested however we want. However, we might do well to consider that STDs deserve the massive stigma we heap. However, we might do well to consider whether STDs deserve the massive stigma we heap upon them. Okay, let's see what I can find to read now. I'm looking. Still looking. Too good on my looking. Everything in your power to avoid these 10 atrocious Christmas comedies. The filmmakers, the only thing better than a big hit is one that turns out to be a perennial hit. If you manage to produce a movie that stokes the general public's lust for holiday tradition, you're halfway toward a year-end residual storm. Movie fans spend large swaths of their lives revisiting films like White Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life, and A Christmas Story, when the holiday season rolls around. Hence the annual appearance of a few more Christmas season hopefuls, films that endeavor not only to make some decent coin at the box office, but also to live on as a holiday tradition. This may explain why so many Christmas-themed movies are so terrible, because they're cloying, cynical attempts at capturing what other films rightly earned. There are dozens of viable options for Christmas season movie night, but we keep coming back to the classics, not to mention the tangential, less deserving titles like Die Hard and Gremlins, because they're well-made films, not just because they take place around Christmas. So keep this list of terrible Christmas movies handy as you flip through the channels this month. That might keep you from wasting 2 hours on a fat lump of cinematic coal. Santa Claus the Movie, 1985. What's next after ruining the Superman film franchise in 3 movies or less? If you're a mega producer like Alexander Salk and you turn to the public domain character and spend $40 million or so on a truly woeful production laden with awful jokes and endless product placements and dump it in the theaters in late November, we open with a dreary yet disturbing origin in which a story of a charitable old couple and their reindeer freeze to death, only to be resurrected by the spirit of Christmas in the form of a bunch of elves who whisk the couple off to the North Pole and grant them immortality. And that's just Act 1. We're treated an endless montage of elf activity before settling into a maddeningly boring story about a wayward elf, Dudley Moore, and shrieking tycoon, John Lithgow. None of it makes a lick of sense unless your viewer is super drunk on Everclear spiked eggnog. And it proves to those who claim that this film is not a comedy, I kindly refer you to Dudley Moore's endless elf puns. For example, elf esteem and elf control. My case rest. Mixed Nuts, 1994. You know, you're in for a particularly weird comedy, for a Christmas comedy, and the premise alone makes nuts about a staff of wacky volunteers who run a suicide prevention hotline that's about to be closed down by the greedy landlord. Yikes. But then you notice the cast. Steve Martin, Madeline Kahn, Rita Wilson, Adam Sandler, Juliette Lewis, Anthony LaPaglia, and Liev Schreiber. Robert Klein, Rob Reiner, and a whole bunch more you won't expect, like Parker Posey. Written by the woman who gave us When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and My Blue Heaven. Really? There are many reasons to be intrigued by Mixed Nut as there are reasons to dislike it. From the wheezing slapstick shtick to the frequently distasteful combination of silly seasonal silliness and ramshackle black humor, virtually nothing about this movie hits the mark. It seems to be going for old school screwball vibe mixed in with some Neil Simonish banter and topped off with an ironically edgy attitude about depression, suicide, and murder. Genius. Jingle All the Way, 1996. One of the biggest tricks in this crappy Christmas comedy playbook is a film that can be as crass as it wants, as long as it tosses just a little dash of artificial sweetness and shameless act of pandering into Act 3. And this noxious Arnold Schwarzenegger comedy qualifies on all counts. Presented with all the grace and warmth one would expect from the director of Snow Dogs, Are We There Yet?, and the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas, Jingle All the Way is an ostensible farce in which an average American dad, that'd be Schwarzenegger, competes with a psychotic mailman, Sinbad, to see who can track down the last remaining Turbo Kid on Christmas Eve. Obviously, one could craft a very pointed satire about the rapid proliferation of merchandising and how it impacts the middle-class family during the holidays, but nope. Jingle All the Way is base stupidity of the most puerile variety, as well as gross love letter to the mindless consumerism. Note of warning, there's an in-name-only sequel out there starring Larry the Cable Guy. I weep for anyone who has seen it. Santa with Muscles, 1996. To call something the worst Hulk Hogan film ever made is no small claim. This is, after all, the man who anchored such family classics as Suburban Commando, Mr. Nanny and Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain. But there's something particularly unsettling about this one. It's not just because it was co-produced by Jordan Belfort, a man who was known to work on The Wolf of Wall Street. It's about the wealthy jerk, Hogan, who gets bonked on the head and ends up believing that he's, you guessed it, Santa Claus. Oh boy. It's not just that the lead actor can't act and the production design looks like a flea market dumpster, or that the screenplay is laden with painful attempts at humor. It's that title, Santa with Muscles. Seriously? Why not Super Santa or Brawler Claws or Santa Saves the Orphanage? On the other hand, if you're trying to see a movie in which a rich ass learns the value of Christmas after suffering a psychotic breakdown and thwarting an evil weirdo who wants to destroy an orphanage because it has magical crystals in the basement, here's your chance. Bands of actors who never say no to anything will no doubt appreciate the contributions of Ed Begley Jr., Clint Howard, and Garrett Morris. While that 70s show's devotees may enjoy the collaboration between Don Stark and Mila Kunis, although I seriously doubt it. I'll Be Home for Christmas, 1998. While the tiresome Home Improvement finally winding down, it was only made sense for temporary teen heartthrob Jonathan Taylor Thomas, to make a leap toward feature films. But this aimless Christmas comedy didn't do his career any favors. It's about a spoiled teenager who's promised a vintage Porsche if he makes it home in time for Christmas. Now, there's a nice holiday lesson. But pretty much bumbles and stumbles his way from Los Angeles to New York with the help of four wildly cliched sequences and seasonal sweetness. Plainly slapped together in a hurry as a vehicle for a kid who was briefly popular with 14-year-old girls, I'll Be Home for Christmas feels like four or five Christmas-themed sitcoms stitched together and tossed writhing into theaters like a Yuletide human centipede. If you need a silver lining while struggling through this one, keep an eye out for Gary Cole and Kathleen Freeman and a young, charming Jessica Biel. Jack Frost, 1998. Michael Keaton, starring as one of those Hollywood bad dads, dies in a car crash only to come back to life as a full-sized and sentient snowman. The screenplay was cobbled together by no less than four writers and then hacked in bits by a desperate editor, aims for little more than young kid befriends otherworldly creature nonsense. Yes, producers were still ripping off E.T. the Extraterrestrial 16 years after its release, and it fails at every turn. The humor isn't funny, the tone is all over the place, entire subplots and characters simply vanish, and the stupid thing can't even get its own internal logic straight. Worst of all, at least for this article is concerned, the movie is little more than a freakish, misshapen modernization of Frosty the Snowman. Yet for all the Christmas-related material seems to have hit the editor's recycle bin. It takes place during Christmas season. There clearly has been a snow-related miracle of some sort, and there are seasonal touches all over the place. Yes, Christmas plays virtually no part in this Christmas flick. Hold on, time for a drink of water. Okay, Christmas with the Cranks. Oh, by the way, when this show's over, I'll be posting this article so you can read it, and it's got little previews of all these movies it's talking about. Christmas with the Cranks, a slapstick Christmas farce based on a novel by John Grisham, from director of American Sweethearts and Revenge of the Nerds 2, starring an inevitably hilarious Tim Allen and well-established physical comedian Jamie Lee Curtis. Well, damn, sign me up for 95 interminable minutes of this nonsense. Little more than a simpering love letter to the act of conformity in suburbia, Christmas with the Cranks poses the following theory. If a suburban couple decide to skip Christmas one year and take a cruise over the holiday season, will they be ostracized by their social circles and derided as traitors, harassed by children, and generally treated like crap? It's not just the mirthless and vapid Chris Columbus screenplay. It's also that Allen and Curtis combined to create one of the most breathtakingly unappealing couples that Christmas time cinema has ever seen. The film is noxious for 85 minutes, tacks on an wholly unearned attempt at sincerity in the last five, and leaves a rotten taste in your mouth for about an hour. Surviving Christmas, 2004. A millionaire with no friends, Ben Affleck, decides to rent the family that lives in his childhood home so he can recapture the magical Christmas emotions of yesteryear, or some such nonsense. The premise could be overlooked as pure sitcom silliness if it didn't feel so much like the infamously tacky 1982 farce, The Toy, a film in which a rotten rich kid with no friends rents a grown man to use as a plaything. Also, I don't know whether a topic like indentured servitude really gels with what we'd like to see in a Christmas comedy. But the bottom line is Surviving Christmas is a shallow, mean-spirited, thoroughly humorless excursion through the realm of cringe humor and rotten slapstick. Do we really need another Christmas movie with incest, porno, and dick jokes? It's often the case with these atrocious seasonal comedies. One cast member does manage to survive unscathed. In this case, it's Catherine O'Hara, who salvaged more than a few rotten comedies. But it's really just a big, tiresome collection of blather, platitudes, and wholly unearned finale full of wildly ineffective sweetness. Finally, any film that wastes the comedic talents of Christina Applegate deserves our collective disdain. Deck the Halls, 2006. What is it with contemporary Christmas comedies being populated almost entirely by hateful jerks? It's not as if Christmas with the Cranks, Surviving Christmas, and Deck the Halls have an up in humor department to begin with, so why are all the characters so obnoxious, such obnoxious imbeciles? A movie only needs one Scrooge, after all, and it helps that the characters created with a small semblance of sincerity. Basically, a blatant rip-off of 1981's dark suburban satire, Neighbors. This Yuletide Klinger pits two plainly disinterested actors, Danny DeVito and Matthew Broderick, against one another in a contest to see who could be the most obnoxious jerk imaginable. DeVito's character is a moronic sociopath and Broderick's is a hateful snob, which raises the question of who in the audience is supposed to care about. The wives are plot devices at best. Which is a shame, because one of them, that'd be Kristen Chenoweth, is the sole source of color and energy that managed to escape from this horrific vacuum of wretchedness that has decked the halls. Try to find the actual plot that runs through the whole thing, you won't. The bulk of the film is dedicated to the idea that DeVito wants to craft the world's brightest Christmas display, whereas Broderick wishes to prevent this sort of behavior. That could also be all that remained after the film's endless treks to the editorial department. And hey, nice incest jokes, guys. Surely that's what PG-rated Christmas comedies are all about, right? Claus, official trailer. Red Claus, 2007. There was a time not so very long ago when I was a staunch defender of Vince Vaughn. It was during the late 90s, actually, right around the Swingers, the Lost World, Clay Pigeons era. I never guessed that one day I'd come to dread the arrival of a new Vince Vaughn movie like The Trip to the Dentist. But that's pretty much what's happened. One can withstand only so many films like Couples Retreat, 2009, The Watch, 2012, Internship, 2013, Delivery Man, 2013, and Unfinished Business, 2015, before suffering horrific Vaughn-fueled nightmares. In Fred Claus, it's pretty much where all this Vince Vaughn as a comedic leading man nonsense got started in the first place. The idea that the eternally abrasive Vaughn stepping into a Scrooge Grinch character sounds funny in theory, but proven here, not to mention in the following year's four Christmases, the actor is simply too belligerent to warrant much goodwill, not to mention the premise that Santa Claus has a rotten brother called Fred is barely amusing enough to warrant a Saturday Night Live sketch. Unfortunately, Fred Claus pretty much typifies the cynical nature of most contemporary Christmas comedies. A whole lot of crass, casual cruelty, followed by some treacly music, shallow cliches about the kindness of family or family that blah, blah, blah. And people wonder why Die Hard is considered a holiday classic these days. So there you have it. Just to prove I'm no Grinch when it comes to Christmas comedies, here's a list of the ones I really like. A Christmas Story, 1993. A Norman Rockwell painting come to life. Sweet, warm, and really funny. Trading Places, 1983. It's a Christmas in Philadelphia as Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd contend with lost fortunes, rotten tycoons, and devious prostitutes. Gremlins, 1984. And that town was so damn cute before the little monsters invaded. Scrooge, 1988. Fantastic late 80s Dickens reboot with Bill Murray as the Yuletide jerkwad who learns to appreciate the holidays after a bunch of ghosts drop by. Christmas Vacation. One of Chevy Chase's best, a little more than a feature-length sitcom, but pretty damn funny. Home Alone, 1990. Notable mainly for its live-action cartoon-style slapstick, this family comedy also throws a nice dash of Christmas spirit into the mix. The Muppet Christmas Carol. Not a funny Muppet movie and surprisingly on point Dickens tradition. It also features Michael Caine as its best comedic performance. The Rep. Dennis Leary and a stellar ensemble angle to this dark but effective Christmas comedy. Bad Santa. As you could probably tell from my naughty list, I prefer Christmas comedies to lean on the wholesome side. But I'll make the exception for this one. Raunchy, nasty, frequently profane, but it also has a nice heart beneath all that R-rated bluster. Elf, 2003. holds up remarkably well on repeat viewings, which is something of a classic Christmas comedy has to do. Okay, I'm going to share this story to the wall because it's got movie clips in it. And that way you can enjoy it yourself if you want to look at the movies a little bit and see what he was talking about here. So I just shared it. And I guess that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, great night, wherever you are. See you next time. Bye.